Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Today is the day.
Good morning. Welcome to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. Paul Perreault is the producer of this program, and he is earning his wage today. So we've been having a little technical difficulty. So if at any point I just disappear, Paul is going to step in. And so just know that in advance. He and I are working feverishly to keep all the technology up and running this morning. And thank you for not only joining us, but taking us along in your day. Let me ask you this. Have you feasted on the Word of God today? Is your meat to do the will of the Father? That's what Jesus said when the disciples were like, you know, how could you possibly have eaten? There's no food out here. And he says, you know, I got food you don't know about. My meat is to do the will of my Father. A lot of folks are considering fasting during the season of Lent, which starts this Wednesday. I wonder if you are among them. I know a number of people who are making Lenten commitments related to food. Some are giving up refined sugar or chocolate or coffee. Others are giving up carbs. I've got one friend who is embarking on a full 40-day fast. Another who is using Lent as the beginning of her veganism. Each of these people wants to change their relationship to food. So if you're planning to fast from some food or some food category during Lent, think about the reason behind that. What's the reason behind your desire to change your relationship with food? Is it your physical health, mental health, spiritual health? Maybe all three, maybe none of the above. We have a relationship with food, and our relationship with food can get complicated. I want you to consider for a moment not only what you eat, but when you eat, how much you eat, why you eat, how much time you spend thinking about what you're going to eat and when you're going to eat and who you're going to eat with. And by the way, who are you eating with? On and on. Food and food-related thoughts can consume us. God certainly knows we need food. He also knows that some of us tend toward unhealthy relationships with food. And last week was Eating Disorder Awareness Week. So Dr. Linda Mental joins us next to help us better understand eating disorders and introduces us to one, frankly, I'd never even heard of. So stay tuned to learn more about orthorexia with Dr. Linda Mental here on Mornings with Carmen.
My fight song, take back my life song, prove that I'm on the right song.
Dr. Linda Mental joins us periodically to talk with us about, frankly, how our mind is created to a lot of things related to our health. And so she's joining us again today to talk about National Eating Disorder Awareness Week. It was actually last week. And for those who may be unaware, we're going to cover some of the basics. So Linda, welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. I'd love for you to start by just telling us what is an eating disorder and maybe what are some of the varieties of eating disorders that people are dealing with?
So an eating disorder, Carmen, is a psychiatric disorder. And I think that's really important to understand that while there is a preoccupation with food, what you called in the earlier part of this a sort of a negative relationship with food, an unhealthy relationship with food, where food becomes the object of a battle or it's obsessional or it's something that you're fighting with, that healthy preoccupation is really symptoms of something else that's going on in a person. So the person is struggling with food, but underneath it, there are psychological and physical and spiritual issues, relational issues that are happening. So there are three types that people are somewhat familiar with, I think, in terms of the names. One is anorexia, and anorexia nervosa is when somebody has an intense fear of gaining weight and they restrict their eating and they become very low weight. And we diagnose this by the person's body mass index, or what people call the BMI. If it's below 18.5, that means you're in the danger zone with your weight, and you're going to have health issues and medical problems. And certainly it's going to affect your mind, because when people have low weight, they don't think clearly. They're a little dizzy. They have all kinds of symptoms that are associated with that. The other one that people have heard of is bulimia nervosa, and this involves binging, where you eat a lot of food really quickly, within a couple of hours, a lot of calories, and then you feel guilty about that, and you purge that food by either vomiting, or you take laxatives or diuretics, or some people just become very compulsive in their exercise, trying to get rid of the calories through exercise. And you have to be doing that at least once a week for a 3-month period before you get diagnosed. And then the third category is something called binge eating disorder. And this is one that probably affects more people in the audience in terms of the statistics. This is equally affects men and women. It's when you do the binging, but you don't get rid of the food. So there's no compensatory mechanism to get rid of the food, which means that you're probably gaining weight because you're having these series of binges. Although some people will binge periodically and then they'll stop eating for a little bit, restrict their food, and then go back on a binge again. But the only difference with bulimia is they're not throwing up or purging the food. So those are the three major ones. Those are the ones that get you a clinical diagnosis with the psychiatric, in the psychiatric manual.
And then you have introduced us, and if people want to go to beliefnet.com and read your column about this, in Doing Life Together, you talk about orthorexia. That is a brand new word for me, and might be a brand new word for others. So tell us what orthorexia is.
So that's a term that's been around since 1997. So Carmen, you got to get with the program here. It's been around.
I'm late to the game. I'm so late to the game.
Well, it literally means in the Greek, correct diet. And it has become a very commonly used term now. You'll hear it. I work with college campus kids. This is really a problem on college campuses, because what happens, it's not a clinical diagnosis, it's not a psychiatric diagnosis, but it is so common that it has become a term for this pathological obsession that people have with eating properly. So it's clean eating, it's, you know, going organic, sugar-free, gluten-free, non-GMO, no pesticides, grass-fed food. And what happens is people get very ritualistic in their eating. They develop all these restrictions in their diet. They get fixated on the quality of the food. And this can be a gateway into developing an eating disorder. In fact, any kind of dieting, especially for women, is really the entree into an eating disorder. So when I work with somebody and they suddenly tell me they've gone vegan or they're vegetarian, I get a real red flag, because I'm like, why the change? What's going on? Because a lot of times that is really just a signal that the person is starting to restrict food, and they're starting to deal with feelings of identity issues, feeling out of control in their life, feeling like they can't deal with conflict and other people. They're scared about their sexual development. All these issues that underlie an eating disorder then get acted out in the food, where people then try to control the food because they feel out of control in the rest of their life. So orthorexia is one of those things that can start it, because you're starting to get narrowly, obsessed with food, preoccupied with food, and it starts to become this thing that you're starting to control. And that is not a healthy step.
So, Linda, it occurs to me that people who are, I mean, I use the word suffering here, with orthorexia, do not view themselves in any way, shape, or form as having an eating disorder.
Well, and it's technically not classified as one. So it's a phenomena that's come up that you'll hear in a lot of. So if you go to the National Eating Disorders awareness sites, they will put this term on here because it's so common, and it's such an entree into developing an eating disorder. Either way, it's not really a healthy relationship with food. So Carmen, one of the books I wrote was called Press Pause Before You Eat. And that whole book is about getting the proper role of food in your life, that from a biblical sense, food is supposed to be celebratory. It's supposed to be feeding our bodies. Jesus took the time to eat. He took the time to rest. He took the time to pray. It was a communal thing. There were feasts involving eating. So we don't want to get to the point where when we're dealing with food, we're somehow becoming obsessional and preoccupied and restrictive, or we're feeling out of control with food, and it just occupies so much of our thoughts that we're thinking about, when's our next treat? How can I deal with that? Uh-oh, I ate too much. Now I got to go and, you know, exercise. Now I can't put that in my mouth because I'll gain weight. All of that obsessional thinking can create so many problems in a person. And I'm so glad that you mentioned at the beginning of the introduction about fasting, because we are coming up on Lent. This Wednesday is Ash Wednesday. And if you struggle with an eating disorder, I would not recommend that you fast with food. It would be a way better thing to use something else, fast social media, fast something else in your life, but don't use food. Because if you're dealing with an eating disorder, or you're starting to get into this orthorexia kind of thinking, your relationship with food is getting disturbed, and you don't want to do anything that's going to create even more, preoccupation with that.
So, Linda, when we continue this conversation, let's talk with folks about what they can do. And then I think it's important for people to know that eating disorders actually affect not just women, but men and people of all races. So let's cover some of that terrain in just a minute.
Okay, sounds good.
You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I will continue my conversation with Dr. Linda Mental in just a minute. Continuing my conversation now with Dr. Linda Mental from the Linda Mental Show here on the Faith Radio Network. Linda, first of all, you and I have a mutual friend, Donna Van Leer. So just a good morning to you from Donna, our mutual friend today.
I love her. I love her. And she did shout me out on social media. She said, hey, I heard you the other day with Carmen. And I just, you probably didn't know that the two of us are friends. So Donna's wonderful. She's written some wonderful books. She's written a phenomenal one on child abuse that anybody who's interested in that should pick up. So she's a great woman of God too. So it's great that we have a mutual friend.
I know. I totally love that. So I appreciate you even more knowing that you love Donna and she loves you. So let's continue our conversation about eating disorders. They are equal opportunity offenders if they affect people of all races and men as well as women. So maybe just let folks in on some of that information.
Yeah, so I'm glad we're talking about that, because we don't typically think of men when we think of eating disorders, although 10% of men really do struggle with this. And in our culture, Carmen, that is so preoccupied with weight and body image and appearance and, you know, everything. Plastic surgery is on the rise. All these, the social media, when you put something on, you know, there's an expectation that you filter it, you Photoshop yourself, and you only present your best pictures. All of this is contributing to not only women, but also men being very body conscious. So for men, the biggest difference is men don't typically enter into an eating disorder through the route of dieting. Usually it's through exercise and the focus on shape. So it's much more shape focused. You think about athletics. And, I work in an area with Division I athletes. And so we actually have a program for dealing with those athletes with eating disorders. And they might be female athletes in like swimming and certainly gymnastics. Any athletic endeavor you're involved in has to do with keeping your body fit. But for men, wrestling, even football, weightlifting, all of those are sports that really have an emphasis on the body. And there's a subcategory of this that sometimes people don't think about. It really affects men. It's not in the eating disorder category, but it's in the obsessive compulsive category, where men get something called muscle dysmorphia. And what happens is that they get so preoccupied with feeling like they have to have that big build out that they see on, you know, in the movies and they see in cartoons and even in avatars, where they have that sort of V-shaped body with the six pack, and they can feel less than. So underneath all of these, whether it's men or women, is a real focus, a loss of identity, you know, not feeling like you measure up, not feeling like you're good enough, you're not feeling like you can be in relationship with people without feeling like you're out of control. And so all of this gets sort of acted out in the area of food and weight. You know, that's a place you can control. I can work out a certain amount of time. I can control what I eat. I may not be able to control the conflict I'm having in my relationship or the way I feel about myself, but I can go to the food and I can go to exercise and weightlifting and those types of things and control the way I at least put myself out there in appearance.
So Linda, let's help people now with resources. How do I identify an eating disorder in myself, or how do I help a friend recognize that they have an eating disorder? And then what do we do?
Yeah, and so important, because early identification really gives you the best shot at getting better and really recovering from one of these disorders. And I need to say, Carmen, that this has the highest mortality and morbidity of any psychiatric disorder. So people die from eating disorders. And I think that's so important for people to recognize, because when you begin to waste away with anorexia, there are so many physical problems that happen. You decrease your bone density. There's all kinds of electrolyte disturbances that can lead to cardiac arrest, and it gets very, very serious. Same with vomiting and some of the other behaviors involved. So this is not something that you don't want to get help for. You do have to have medical supervision, usually when you're dealing with one of these. And the way you identify it is to just know the signs and the symptoms. And you can go to any of the eating disorder sites that are on the internet, and they'll give you the signs and symptoms. But it's basically those things that I talked about at the beginning, with the low weight, the fear of gaining weight, the body preoccupation and dissatisfaction, and then the binging and purging and the bulimia. But the issue here is that you do need to get the help of not only maybe the medical supervision, but also probably working with a registered dietitian so that you can put nutrition in the right perspective and you understand what your body needs to be strong and to be healthy. And that's really our focus, is building strong and healthy bodies, not getting the perfect number on the scale. And then you do have to do some therapy, because those issues that I mentioned about understanding who you are, and as you're growing and developing and your body becomes sexual, for the anorexic, that's kind of a scary process of, now I have to deal with the opposite sex. Now I have to deal with my sexuality. And that's also true for men. One of the highest groups of men that struggle with an eating disorder are gay men. So body identity, your identity in Christ as a person of faith is so important to get focused on. Then understanding how you have to let go of control in your life, how you have to get better with your own assertiveness, conflict resolution, social skills, you know, all the things, interpersonal difficulties that you encounter, so that you don't allow depression to come in, because these disorders are also what we call comorbid, which just means that they come alongside of eating disorders. There's a lot of anxiety and depression, obsessional thinking, perfectionism, those kinds of problems that also go along. So you have to get in treatment typically and allow God to, you know, heal those parts of you that are really struggling to feel like you're good enough and that you fit in and that you can assertively deal with the people in your life in a very honoring but functional way.
Dr. Linda Mental on the subject of eating disorders, but she's got a lot to say about a lot of other things as well. You can check out what she's talking about on the Dr. Linda Mental Show here on the Faith Radio Network. You can also check out her blogs at beliefnet.com. And if you just search Dr. Linda Mental, you will also find the book, Press Pause Before You Eat. Linda, thank you so much for joining us again today on Mornings with Carmen.
Always a pleasure. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, we look forward to the next time as well. All right, friends, let's hear what the guys at Breakpoint have to say today. Your Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBerge. So as we continue to, I don't know, gather information, respond to, react to what the media is panning as President Trump's failed summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un last week. Let me just admit, I'm not sure that I see it exactly that way. Up next, I'm going to ask David Aikman what he thinks. I'm also going to ask him to brief us in on the indictment of Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and we're going to get updates on Venezuela and Brexit. All next, right here on Mornings with Carmen.
They've been around for thousands of years. It's one of man's longest enduring inventions. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I'm talking about maps. Nowadays, we can just pull them up on our computers and smartphones, but we'd be foolish to go on a trip without consulting a map to plan out where we're going. The same thing goes for raising kids. Right now, you have an immature child that you want to see grow into an independent adult. But how do you get from point A to point B? My recommendation is to map out a plan. It could look like an outline of new responsibilities you give your child every year they grow older. But mom and dad shouldn't set out on the journey without plotting the directions. Mom, dad, draw the map.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Check out his latest resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Dr. David Aikman, welcome again to Mornings with Carmen. For those who don't know him, he's an award-winning print and broadcast journalist, a best-selling author, a foreign affairs commentator. He's got a really wide range of experience and expertise, and we like to talk to him every single Monday to bring us up to date on what's happening around the world and close to his home in Great Britain. So, David, welcome back.
Carmen, thank you so much. So nice to be with you again.
Well, it's always nice to talk with you. I'd like your perspective on the Trump-Kim summit aftermath. We all know that the president walked away. He publicly accused North Korea of demanding an end to all sanctions before they would denuke. We now hear not only from North Korea, but also from the leader of South Korea, the president of South Korea, that that's not exactly the way they perceived things. And so I'm just curious, is it possible that we don't really have a failed summit, but more of a strategic move to get North Korea to show its hand and the limited sanctions that they'd be willing to accept the removal of in order to denuke?
Well, I don't regard the summit as failed in any way. I think a number of commentators have pointed out actually it was an effective move by the president to walk away when what the North Koreans were offering apparently fell far short of what the U.S. expected them to produce in line with the whole denuclearization program. And I think also the fact that he walked away served notice to China that the U.S. is going to be pretty tough on trade issues as well. So we'll see what happens, to use a quote from President Trump.
We'll see what happens. Okay, let's turn to Israel. Maybe I'll just do this. What in the world is going on in Israel? We hear that the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been indicted. Can you tell us what's going on?
Yes, he's been indicted for allegedly receiving a number of gifts from wealthy admirers and friends of Israel overseas, including, according to the indictment, a number of billionaires. And the Israelis are very strict on what their politicians can accept from overseas in terms of remuneration or rewards or anything. And if he had accepted any gifts of the kind of value that is referred to in the allegations, he could be in serious political trouble. But a lot of longtime observers of Israeli politics say that this is just a classic case of the center-left media ganging up against Bibi because they've never liked him. I mean, when I was in Israel, reporting there back in the 80s and 90s, it was universally felt by many of the academics and the media people that he was too conservative, too far right. I don't think he is too far right, at least according to what Israel needs for its own security. But that kind of suspicion could eventually build up to bring great pressure on the Attorney General to indict him. And that's what happened.
So let's move to another big headline news story of the past week, and that is what's happening, well, what happened, and then what's happening now between India and Pakistan. So for people who have literally no awareness of this, can you sort of rewind the tape on this story and tell us what's happened over the course of the past week?
Yes, absolutely. Well, we have to rewind it basically 50 or more years, 60 years. The partition of India when the British left in 1947 into two different states, India and Pakistan. And there was a section of Muslim-populated territory called Kashmir that the Indians claimed as their own and which they eventually got administrative sovereignty over, but that has been a bone of contention innumerable times since India and Pakistan began to have a series of conflicts starting in 1947 and then going on through the 1970s and up recently till the 2000 decade. So the Pakistanis have been suspected by the Indians of training guerrilla soldiers to make attacks on Indian military formations controlling Kashmir. And what happened last week or the week before last was that a bomb blew up under a truck carrying 40 Indian soldiers who were administering Kashmir, killing all 40 of them. And the Indians felt that this was clear evidence that the Pakistanis had been training guerrilla fighters on the in the Kashmir struggle. And therefore, India felt it had to show signs that it was definitely rejecting this kind of interference. And that's why the Indian attack took place and the pilot was shot down by Pakistani aircraft.
So it looks like, based on CNN's reporting of 2 hours ago, that the Indian pilot has now returned home. He has returned home. They're describing him as a hero. And just for your information, David, in case you're not up to speed on this, he has apparently sparked a mustache trend.
Oh, yes, it's so funny. This wing commander, which is a fairly senior rank in the Air Force, probably equivalent to a colonel in the American Air Force, he has a sprouted mutton chop mustache and beard continuum, which makes him look like a character out of Charles Dickens. It's really quite impressive. I don't know why that fashion became popular in the Indian Air Force, but apparently it did. So we'll have to see.
Well, and now it's all over social media. Apparently, pretty much anybody who had a mustache and a beard going into the weekend came out of the weekend with this sculptured. I don't know even what I'm supposed to describe it as. So it's sort of the opposite of having a goatee. It's like having a beard with no, it's very curious, right? It looks like it takes some serious architectural grooming.
Well, it's a beard and mutton chops, and that used to be a fashion in England, actually, and in the US many years ago. But it certainly went out of the trend. And so I'm delighted that he's reintroduced it.
So David Aikman and I are covering the most important international news of the day, and we will continue doing so, turning our attention to the situation in Venezuela and then getting an update on Brexit. All that next here on Mornings with Carmen. So I'm continuing my conversation with David Aikman. He and I like to survey the international news and allow him to bring his years of journalistic perspective to bear, he's a particularly astute student of history as well. And so the breadth of his knowledge I find incredibly valuable. So, David, let's turn our attention to back to Venezuela. Over the weekend, at least three people were killed, hundreds more injured, as opposition activists tried to defy a government ban on bringing food supplies and hygiene supplies, nutritional supplements, what you and I would call humanitarian aid, into the country. We actually had a conversation in the first hour of today's program with Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News, and she brought us up to date on what ministries, particularly those right on the border of Colombia and Venezuela, ministries like Compassion International, how they are actively engaged. We talked about churches in Colombia really being on the forefront of the refugee flow, and Colombian Christian families actually receiving people fleeing Venezuela into their homes, much like we have seen in Lebanon, folks receiving refugees from Syria. So with all of that in mind, let's have a slightly more political view of things. It sounds like folks are reorganizing after this fight for humanitarian aid over the weekend.
Yes, I think, Maduro has dug his heels in from the very beginning of this confrontation with Guaido, who proclaimed himself president and was recognized as such by several countries, including the United States and the European Union. And he's absolutely determined, of course, with the connivance both of Russia and China, and naturally enough, Cuba, to keep himself in power and keep the Chavistas, as the followers of Hugo Chavez is sometimes called, in charge of politics in Venezuela. Now, the question is, will Guaido be able, or will his activists be able to sort of nurture a bunch of junior military officers across the line to support the efforts to get foreign aid into the country again? And we just don't know what the answer is. I mean, Maduro has at present all of the security apparatus and the army at his fingertips, but that's been the situation in other countries where there has been regime change, and the change eventually occurred in spite of everybody's feeling that it probably wouldn't. So we'll just have to wait and see.
All right, so we'll put the pause button again on Venezuela, and let's pivot to Brexit. The headlines include everything from needing to delay as possibly being the only option for a smooth Brexit to the New York Times saying, hey, maybe there's an upside to Brexit. So what's your perspective this week?
Well, I think the prospect looks a little brighter than it did last week for Theresa May to get reluctant Conservative and Labour members of Parliament behind her deal that she signed with the EU on the terms of leaving the EU. And she wants just some modest assurances from the EU that things like the so-called Irish backstop, which would in theory keep the United Kingdom under the control of European Union law for an indefinite period of time, if she's able to get the EU to agree to trimming its particular coercive approach to dealing with this agreement to leave the EU, if she can do that, then Conservatives and Labour will get behind the deal. It certainly looks a bit more likely now, but if it doesn't happen, then she is going to allow a vote on whether there should be a continuation of the whole negotiation, and therefore a delay in actually implementing leave for a few months. But interestingly enough, polls have revealed that in the UK, the British really are prepared to put up with 1 or 2 months or maybe 3 months delay on the implementation of leaving, but they won't put up with anything else. So it's still, the stakes are still very high.
And just practically speaking, David, how are folks in Britain feeling? Maybe that's just a, sort of give us a man on the street view. I would imagine this is fairly frustrating for the average person.
Oh, yes, it's very frustrating. I mean, you have to consider this, that for several months last year, there was not exactly an ad, but it was a sort of episode every 2 or 3 programs on the BBC where people spoke of Brexit like getting cornflakes. Did you get your Brexit today? And somebody goes into a fast food store, buys a hamburger, and the assistant says, would you like some Brexit with it? So that was kind of lighthearted. But the programs that the BBC has been running recently show a very fed-up electorate that just wants the whole thing to be done with. They just don't want this persistent back and forth between London and Brussels and persistent argument by supporters of Brexit and supporters of Remain to continue. They want the whole thing to be finished. And if she can pull off a deal of any kind that actually brings an end to this political acrimony, she will have done a great success in her career.
David Aikman, thank you for joining us again today on Mornings with Carmen. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you, Carmen. You have a great week.
You too. You too. Okay, we've got just a couple of minutes left here this morning together. Let's literally take a 1 minute pause and then rejoin one another for the end of the hour. I'm Carmen LeBurge. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. So every Monday, I actually aggregate stories that I have been paying attention to over the weekend or things that I think will be consuming our conversations in the week ahead. I post them at reconnectwithcarmen.com in something I call the Must Read Monday. So today's Must Read Monday is now posted at reconnectwithcarmen.com. If you want to know the things that I am reading and thinking about and, things that that I think will be a part of the conversations of the day in the days ahead. You can always email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. Let me know what you're thinking about, the concerns you have, the stories you'd like to hear addressed here on Mornings with Carmen. And then you can always share today's show with somebody new. So Paul Perreault, as immediately following our time together as he can, he posts the audio from the show at myfaithradio.com. And there's a podcast. And so if you want to actually sign up to receive the podcast, you can do that. And it's a great way to share the show with someone new. So maybe you've heard something today that sparked your interest. Maybe you'd like more information about the Valued Conference. You couldn't actually sit down and take notes during the opening segment today. Or you want prayer reminders for folks all around the world that Ruth Kramer shared from the Mission News Network. Whatever it might be, you can hear all of it again by visiting myfaithradio.com and grabbing today's audio via the podcast, which will be up shortly. Again, many thanks to Paul Perreault for managing our technology woes today. This has been Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Always a great pleasure to be with you. Go out there and make it a great day. Have a good one, and God bless.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBerge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.